is Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. From hunting to hiking, camping to cooking, mushroom hunting to motorcycling, and so much more, your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Beham, will enlighten, entertain, and inform you with a lively mix of guests and discussion on all things outdoors. And now your hosts, Dave and Andy.
Welcome to another edition of Northfield Outdoors on KYMN 95.1, the 1 and 1080 AM. Northfield Outdoors is proud to be sponsored by Professional Pride Realty. I'm Dave Vesladol, and as always, I have my good-looking co-host, Andy Beham. Welcome, Andy.
You flatter me once again, Dave. How are you doing today?
Oh, it's not too hard to flatter you. It's not. Any big adventures this weekend?
No. I have a lot of yard work that has been put off due to all the rain, so...
Wow, that's exciting radio.
Yeah, well, let's, I know. Let's move on to people that did things. Yeah.
Well, today being we're going to be talking motorcycling, we have brought back our very own official Northfield Outdoors motorcycle consultant, Pat May.
You're nicer than me. I was going to call him an intern.
Okay. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah. Well, the last time Pat was on, we had so much email and letters coming in about getting him back on the air again. Oh, so we had no choice, Pat. So welcome back.
Thanks.
Hey, Pat, I understand you did take a little motorcycle trip this weekend, though.
I did. I went down with a couple of guys and their wives to Anamosa, Iowa, to the museum down there, and also for the JP Open House.
A place I always want to try and get to.
And you missed it.
Again. Oh, wow.
No, we had a really good time. Great weather, too.
Was it? And see a lot of stuff inside the museum?
Yeah, there's hundreds of bikes, just about anything you could think about. Dragsters, hill climbers, board racers, all kinds of stuff.
Well, that sounds pretty fun. Next time.
I'm going to take it.
Well, how about you, Dave? What did you do this last weekend?
I stayed home and took care of my lovely bride. She had to have a surgery on her back. And needless to say, she was on her back for the weekend. I don't think she would appreciate it if I would have. Hey, honey, I got you in the door here. My bike is packed. So I'm ready to go.
So is she getting sick of you yet?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's hard to believe.
I know. I can't believe it.
It is a little strange. But no, we've had a couple of rough days, but now she's on the road to recovery.
Oh, good. Best of luck to Jody with her recovery.
Well, today, we're going to be talking motorcycling in the Appalachian Mountains. And a lot of you guys know I like to go over and work out in the mornings at the YMCA. And while I was over there, I got to know or meet a gentleman, Jack. And Jack, I swear, I'm going to try and get your last name right, Weidenbach.
That's right.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, Jack and I we'll sit and talk sometimes about motorcycling because Jack's a very avid rider. And he started to tell me about all the time he has spent motorcycling down in the Appalachian Mountains. And that is one trip I want to take. And I said, okay, we got to get you on the radio. So we want to hear more about that. So welcome, Jack.
Thank you, Dave.
Jack, before we get going, well, why don't you give us a little bit about your background? First, I assume you're retired.
I am. I actually retired in 2005. So I've had the intervening years now, 13 years, to get a lot of riding in. But I rode a lot while I was still working, weekends and vacations.
So how long have you been riding motorcycle?
I hate to say this, but it's 54 years.
Oh, wow. Wow, almost as old as I am.
Oh, yeah. We'll go with that.
And, what kind of bike are you riding now?
I have two BMWs right now, an R1200 GS Adventure, which is, you know, the big bike you see in the advertisements a lot, metal, aluminum panniers and, you know, lots of guards around the engine and everything. That's my main road bike. And then I have an F800R, which is 800cc, a little kind of a road.
Yeah, but that's the kind of the fun one, isn't it?
They're both very good on curvy roads. The F800 is, you know, I'm good for about 350 miles a day on it, but I'd have a hard time taking that on a long trip. But when I take that down there, I trailer it.
Oh, you?
So far, I have at least. Okay. It's always tempting if you have enough time to, you know, break it up and ride, but I don't know, Illinois and Indiana aren't much fun on anything, and on a slow bike, it'd be even worse.
Well, Pat, here's another person that's got two bikes like yourself.
That's right, Dave, you're lagging behind.
I'm feeling deprived, Andy. I don't know about this.
And Jody's at home right now wishing her back felt better so she could hide the checkbook.
Yes, exactly.
Although I don't think Andy has any bikes.
And that's why we had to bring you in.
Pat, why don't you tell everybody what you currently ride?
I'm riding a 2014 Indian Chief Vintage, and I have my dad's old Harley Sportster. It's an 02 model with about 4,000 miles on, and I bought it from him just because I wanted to have the last bike he rode. So,
and that's a fun little bike.
It is.
That's a fun bike. Jack, you're what did you tell me? You're 73 years old?
72. Don't rush me.
I just got corrected on that. We really want to talk a little bit about preparing, going down to the Appalachian, that whole area down there. What draws you to that area?
Well, I think what really draws me there is this huge concentration of great roads. And, you know, the scenery is nice. It's mountains. It's green. It's, you know, woods, valleys. You know, all of that. It's a little bit like southwest Wisconsin if you get off of the river a bit into the Driftless. And if you magnified that by about 10 or 12 times, the hills are bigger, the mountains are bigger, the valleys are bigger. The roads where in Wisconsin, if you get on an alphabet road and, you know, you might go 3-4 miles or 5 or 6 miles and then you get to an intersection, either a turn or whatever. In the Appalachians, you can often go 25 or 30 miles before you hitch to another road. And if you plan your routes, you rarely have stretches of straight roads. You can just kind of stay on curvy roads all day long if you want to. And it's like unlike anything here or really anywhere else in the country. So that's really what draws me there.
So you've been down there a number of times. How many times do you think you've been down there?
Well, if I'm counting right, 17 or 18 times. I was down there the first time, not until 2002. And last year, last summer, I was there for a little over 2 weeks in August with the F800R, and then I went back at the end of September and with the other bike, rode down, and about 10 days then, so...
What part of the Appalachians do you generally go to? Now, that runs pretty much up and down the whole East Coast. Is there a particular part that you really like?
Yeah, I mean, if you start way up in New England, that would be the northern end in the U.S., at least, of the Appalachians. And it's nice, but it's more populated, and there aren't as many really good roads as technical good roads. So I'd say starting the western part of Maryland, where Maryland and Virginia, Pennsylvania, they all kind of come together, and that is really the start of the really good riding. And all the way from there, heading south and west down to Deal's Gap, and that's primarily where I've ridden. It extends a little further than that. You can get down into northeast Georgia. It's very nice. And I've done that a little bit, but not extensively.
And the road conditions, does that vary much by state? I mean, are there better parts to ride as far as if you're looking just strictly at road conditions?
You know, it's funny. Living in Minnesota, I used to think, we've got the best road surfaces. You get into Iowa and the roads are crummy. Wisconsin, they weren't as good as Minnesota. That's totally flipped around now. Down there, the roads are uniformly well-paved. I ride with people who live there, and they'll be complaining about the road surface, and I'm thinking, this is one of the best roads I would ride all year. And, you know, they get spoiled because the roads are really good.
They are.
Even the back roads, the secondary roads, are usually quite good.
Are most of them paved?
Oh, yeah, they're all paved. I mean, they do have some gravel roads, but there's so many paved roads that you don't have to go there unless you want to.
Oh, wow.
Now, Dave and I have been out to the Rockies riding. How does that compare with the Appalachians?
Well, I've done a lot of riding in the Rockies until 2002. That's where I always went, out west. And I think the comparison is that in the west, you get these great vistas. You know, it's kind of iconic American West scenery. And you get some nice roads going over mountain ranges. But in between, you might have 100 miles of straight roads. And you can see mountains off in the distance, or maybe it's 50 miles and the next range is over. But there aren't as many roads, so you don't have as many choices. Like if you're going through Wyoming or Montana, say, you've got a few choices. And anything that isn't on the state highway map is probably going to be dirt. So it's a little hard unless you're riding a dual sport.
GS.
The GS works. I did the Continental Divide ride where you start at the Mexican border and go to the Canadian border in 2012 with a couple of friends, and they both rode GS Adventures, and I had one, but I also had a DR650, the Suzuki dual sport, so I took that, and I was always waiting for him. You know, I'd ride ahead and stop and wait. But
well, I run into that a lot with Pat. I have to stop
and wait. Yeah, okay. It's a problem. Yeah,
no. But Pat, there's another ride for us.
Yeah, that would be fun. We've never gone that direction.
No. Well, we should do that. Okay, so Pat and I are going to go ahead and decide we're going to ride to Appalachian, that whole area. Starting out, what type of a bike do you think is the best bike to, and I'm not saying necessarily pin you down on a particular model or anything, but what type of a riding bike should one really think about having to really enjoy the Appalachians?
Well, you know, you have to bring what you got, but the best bikes tend to be bikes that handle well, not the heaviest of bikes, although I've seen people go down some of those roads on Goldwings at a pretty good clip. But you need some ground clearance because you lean a lot. And a bike that is light and steers easily, goes around curves easily, doesn't wear you out as much. So, you know, you wind up at the end of the day, you're not exhausted from fighting a big bike. So,
is there a particular part, if Pat and I have not rode on the Appalachians, is there a particular part we should go to first? That you say, well, this is the must-do if you've got just one chance.
There's so many.
Oh, okay. well, let's hear a few of those.
But one would be just the Blue Ridge Parkway, which basically traverses Virginia, North Carolina, and into Tennessee. If you start around Charlottesville, Virginia, the Blue Ridge Parkway ends just north of Charlottesville. Then it becomes, I think, the Skyline Parkway through Shenandoah National Park over towards Washington, D.C., but that isn't, it loses some of its elevation and curviness over there. But the Blue Ridge from that Charlottesville area all the way to Cherokee, North Carolina, where it ends, it's over 400 miles, and every bit of it is nice. And not only is the Blue Ridge Parkway itself nice, every road that comes up to the parkway and goes back down on either side, and the connecting roads between those roads are wonderful. You know, they're just a joy to ride. It's like owning 1,000 roller coasters.
Is there a particular time of year that you would suggest? Is May or June more rainy than a July or August, or does it really make any difference as far as the weather or scenery?
I've been there as early as April and as late as early November.
Oh, and that way.
You know, their spring and fall is, you know, a few weeks earlier and a few weeks later than ours. So early in the spring, I've run into a lot of rain. Now, I don't know if that's in fact always that way, but my impression is that you get some really hard rains early in the year. Later in the year, I haven't run into that. you have to remember that there's some elevation there, and especially on the western end of, or southwestern end of the Blue Ridge, you got 5,000 feet, over 5,000 feet of elevation, so it can be chilly, cold in the mornings. I've come out to frost on the seat of the bike a few times. So you you know, you need to dress for that. You need to have gear along to stay warm. And if it's midsummer, it can be hot, just like here, so you need to dress for that.
Jack, how long does it take to get out there? Is it about 1,000 miles just to kind of get to the start of it? And then I suppose you can just go as far as you want,
right,
and head back. Mm-hmm. But it's quite a hike to get out there, isn't it? I think Colorado was around 1,000 miles when we used to go out there.
Yeah, Colorado, Denver's 900 and something, and
okay.
It's about the same distance to get, you know, to the edge of that. I like to go down to the Ohio River, say Marietta, Ohio. Athens, Ohio isn't quite on the river, but it's in that area, because southeast Ohio is part of that riding. There's some great roads in southeast Ohio, and then you can cross the river and you're in West Virginia. And I can get to Marietta in 2 days. It's two long days. You know, you got to do 500-mile days. But if you stick to the freeways, that goes pretty fast. I don't like freeways. So I kind of break it up a little bit. But truthfully, they're, you know, like getting around Indianapolis, the only reasonable way to do that is be on the freeway. So, and I avoid Chicago. I always go around that.
Well, we're going to go ahead and take a short break and hear from our sponsor.
Professional Pride Realty is a proud sponsor of Northfield Outdoors on 95 The One. Let the staff and realtors at Professional Pride help you make coming indoors from the outdoors a welcoming experience in the home that's right for you. The realtors at Professional Pride are local and know the Northfield market. Whether it's buying your first home, upgrading from your current home, or purchasing your own slice of the outdoors, let Professional Pride help you every step of the way. To learn more, check them out on Facebook or at ProfessionalPrideRealty.com. Keep enjoying the outdoors and let Professional Pride worry about your indoors.
Welcome back. We're talking with Jack Weidenbach, age 73, a gentleman that I met. 72. I keep adding a year on you. A gentleman that I met at the YMCA, and we got talking motorcycling, and it was just fascinating listening to some of his stories about riding around in the Appalachian Mountains. And I said, we got to get him on here. And, of course, we are on KYMN 95.1, The One, 1080 AM. Jack, riding in the Appalachian Mountains, let's talk a little bit about some of the financials and stuff like that. If we wanted to go ahead and take a three-week trip, take a few days going down there, a few days coming back, and then riding around, how expensive is it? And I don't know if you typically stay in motels or if you camp it or if you've done both. Throw us out a ballpark figure that we should look at.
Yeah, I've done both. Camping, of course, is a lot cheaper. And the nice thing about camping in that area is that there are some motorcycle-only campgrounds. There's one by Meadows of Dan, Virginia, kind of the middle of the Blue Ridge Parkway, called Willville, run by a guy named Will Beers. Just a great spot. Down by Deals Gap, you know, you have the Deals Gap Motorcycle Resort, and there's another one there called Kickstands Up or Kickstand something. I've never stayed there, but I know it's there. And there are others scattered around, and if you do a Google search, you can find them. So that's probably about a half to a third of the cost of hotel rooms. Helps a lot if you can split the cost of motel rooms with,
sure,
a buddy if you're riding together. I usually figure on the way down, you know, you're going to be in a chain motel. It's going to cost you $100 a night. And other than gas and food, you know, it's really about your only expense. Once you're there, especially if you're riding with other people, you know, $50 a night maybe if you're splitting hotel rooms. So it's not terribly expensive. It's about the same as it would cost you here if you took a weekend and went someplace.
Would you have to be making, if you were staying in a motels, do you need to really make reservations in advance, or are motels pretty easily just to pull up and stop in and check in?
It depends. Some places, like on the Blue Ridge Parkway, there are these lodges that I think were owned by the federal government at one time, but they're run by private vendors now. And those, especially during busy times of the year, you want to have reservations.
You do.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to make them months in advance, but a few weeks maybe. There's Mount Pisgah Inn and Peaks of Otter, a couple of others that if you Google a Blue Ridge Parkway, you'll find those. And other than that, in the little towns, you know, off the Blue Ridge Parkway, there are some great places to stay, and I've never had any trouble at all just going in for a room.
So there's plenty of places if you want a motel. And the same thing with camping. There's plenty of places
Definitely.
If I wanted to do that.
Right.
Are the roads real nice out there? Are they take care of them pretty well?
Yeah, the roads are fantastic. You can't believe how good the pavement is. And when you're sweeping down off the ridge on a road that's just twisting like crazy, and you don't have to worry about gravel on the road, you don't have to worry about potholes or tar snakes or anything. It's just a joy.
And I'm assuming as you go along those roads, what's the most interesting wildlife you've seen going along through the Appalachians?
Well, any deer that jumps out in front of you is pretty interesting.
That's a good line. That's a good line.
And, you know, they have a lot of deer, at least as many as we do. The funny thing is I see fewer of them down there than I've seen, you know, like around here in Wisconsin. But they have a lot of deer, and I know people who have hit deer up there. Other than that, you know, you see pretty much what you see here, turkeys. You could see the occasional bear, although I've never seen one.
All right.
What about some of the other sites? Let's come back about talking about the roads and stuff, but the actual sites, things, the points of interest that a person would want to stop and check out a little bit more.
Yeah, there are a lot of historical sites just because of the area. It's been settled for a long time, and way too many for me to remember, much less talk about. But, for instance, Lexington, Virginia, which is right off the parkway, is the home of Virginia Military Institute.
Oh, okay.
It's where Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson are buried. And, you know, just an interesting area. If you get on little back roads, secondary roads, a lot of them are in Virginia, at least, are designated with three numbers, so it'll be like 523 or whatever. And they run through these little towns that have been there since the 1700s, and you know, every one of them has an inn or something in it that's interesting. So a lot of Civil War history in the area. If you depending on what you like, you can kind of look for those kinds of things and visit them.
Is there some good food to be had?
Lots of good food. Lots of good food.
Well, Pat, we're there. Yeah. Pat's also our food consultant, especially at breakfasts.
You know, because it's up in the mountains, they have a number of resorts, and some of them are pretty high-end resorts, but they'll have restaurants that you can go and eat at, and it's just sort of nice to see how the other half lives, plus, you know, be able to eat there.
Yeah. And riding on the roads, I want to get back to the roads a little bit. The typically twisty, turny type of roads, not very long stretches of flat ground.
Yeah, you can find some straight roads if you're like running up the middle of a valley on a major highway. It'll generally be straight, but then running off of that in either direction to the next ridge line, there'll be great twisty roads. And sometimes you need the break, you know. Sometimes you get tired, so you have to get off on a straight road and relax for a while. And then, because the roads are, they can be intense, and you have to really be concentrating. You can't be thinking about anything else. You always have to be focusing on the vanishing point. You know, when the road might be vanishing, you know, 50 feet in front of you, and you're going 45 miles an hour around a real tight curve. You just have to be paying attention to what you're doing. You have to stay away from the center line, you know, or if there is no center line, stay away over on the right side of the road, because sooner or later there's going to be something coming from the other direction right in the middle of the road. So those are factors that, I mean, when I talk about it, my wife thinks, oh, it's really dangerous, but it isn't if you ride properly and you prepare.
Would you consider the roads more dangerous there than other parts of the country, or is it just being aware of your surroundings?
That's sort of related to the level of skill of the rider and common sense. You know, you never want to ride beyond your capabilities. So, you know, I've been behind people who can ride roads much faster than I can, and they're probably safer than I am. But, you know, you have to know yourself.
Right.
Where you're at.
I know, Jack, you gave me that book, The Art of Riding Smoothly. I'm about halfway through it, and he talks a lot about riding in the mountains and the vanishing point of the road and stuff. And it's an interesting read, and I can kind of understand what you're talking about with those tight, curvy roads and turns and stuff out there. But it's also got to be a lot of fun.
It is. You know, that's what makes it fun, is that it's somewhat challenging. And Jim Ford, the author of that book, I've known him since 2008, I think, or 2007 when we met. And we spent hours and hours just talking about riding and riding techniques and riding those kind of roads and just the joy of it. And, you know, when I first met him, I thought, geez, here's a guy who just feels exactly like I do. So it's kind of neat to see him do the book. He does rider training in that area, and he has a website called theridersworkshop.com. So it's possible to go and sign up for training and as to how to ride those roads well.
If you were a novice rider just learning, that's probably not the first place to go on your first trip.
I would say that's the case. In 2002, when I did my first trip out there, my brother-in-law decided that because Mary Ellen, my wife, and I were going out, that he and his wife would go. And he was not a good rider, and I tried to discourage him, but he went anyway. And they survived. They did an okay job. You know, he's had enough common sense to ride real slowly. We didn't ride together at all, but he enjoyed it.
You left him?
Well, we didn't go down together. We met each other in Pigeon Forge, and I just said, well, have a good ride tomorrow. We're going the other
direction. I just had this cartoon bubble of them two starting out and Jack turning around. Well, we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Is there a lot of traffic on the roads, both cars and motorcycles, do you see?
Well, not when you're on those good roads. If you're at Deals Gap,
right,
then you have, and especially on a weekend, you have traffic, a lot of motorcycles. During the week at Deals Gap is more busy than other places would be, just because it's, you know, well-known and popular. You get trucks, semis going up.
I heard that was dangerous because they swing into your lane.
Well, they do more than swinging. They get stuck on some of the curves. I mean, they're taking up the whole road. You just have to stop and let them pass. And you have to be aware of that because, you know, it's like everywhere else. You don't have a real long sight line generally, so you can't go flying around a curve and all of a sudden be running into a semi. But other than that, there is very little traffic. The roads that I like to ride, I'll be out all day long, and you might see one or two other motorcycles.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're kidding. I really expected that to be a lot.
I thought it would, too.
No, not at all. Even some of the popular, like there's a route called the Snake, US 421.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that. In fact, I think he was talking about it in his book.
Yeah, probably was. Yeah. I like that better than the Dragon, actually. It's equally curvy. It's longer, and there's far less traffic. And I've been on that where you can ride 20 miles, and you might meet one car. And you're not passing anybody because there's nobody in front of you.
Yeah.
That's surprising. But you do see a lot of other bikes. That is a popular bike destination.
If you're there on a weekend, I'm sure you'd see a lot of bikes. But during the week, not so much.
Not so much.
That Route 421 is a little bit remote. It's near Damascus, Virginia. And there isn't any big town real close by.
Have you ever had any?
We've let the secret out, so it's going to become very hot.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Jack. This summer, look out. Are you heading back there this summer?
Planning on getting out there either late September or early October. And I'll go to the Charlottesville area because I have a friend who lives there, and then we ride from there.
Have you ever had any accidents there, being you've been there quite a few times?
Well, I was hoping you'd forget that question.
I know this because he said something about it. He said maybe we shouldn't bring this up. So
you do.
As a hard-hitting person. You're.
Yeah, actually, in 2009, May of 2009, I blame it on medication. I had a serious heart operation or open heart surgery in 2005, which led to my retiring. But I was on medication. They wanted my blood pressure to be really low. And I had been in the doctor a couple times saying, I think it's too low because I'm sort of phasing out every once in a while when I'm driving. And they said, no, we want it really low. So, anyway, I was in West Virginia and just sort of daisy, real lazily, just kind of went off the side of the road. I knew what I was doing, but it was like I was watching myself. And as soon as I went off the edge of the pavement, the bike high-sided and flipped up in the air, almost landed on me on the way down. And anyway, I wound up in a Wheeling, West Virginia hospital for 4 or 5 days. And not a pleasant experience. I don't recommend that to anybody.
How bad were you hurt?
No, I broke my collarbone.
That hurts.
Five ribs and my, and my left thumb.
Oh, so, none of that sounds real good.
Yeah. So. Well, what I found out is if you do need medical attention, West Virginia is probably not the best place to get it.
Well, Dave knows about Arkansas when he had a little mishap.
Yeah, I was nothing against Arkansas, but I was glad to get back to Minnesota. I wasn't that impressed with. We're pretty lucky around here and stuff. More importantly, what happened to the bike?
Well, when I was in the hospital, my insurance agent called and said that, well, we're totaling the bike, and it was 2008. It was new bike. And I argued with him. I said, what are you talking about? And they said, they weren't counting all the luggage and stuff on the bike. So after I argued with them, they went back and they authorized the repair. So it was over $14,000 to fix the bike.
Oh, my gosh.
But they replaced everything that even had a scratch on it. So
how were you found? Did someone see?
I was riding with some other guys. As a matter of fact, Jim Ford was with me on that trip, I think.
Oh, he was.
And we got an ambulance. I can remember that two deputy sheriffs showed up and they were arguing about which county I was in because the road that I was on was the dividing line between Wetzel County and Marshall County, West Virginia. And they were kind of arguing about which one of them had to write it up.
So it depended on which ditch you were in.
And I was in the middle of the road.
Oh, I don't know. I don't mean to laugh, Jack, but that is kind of funny. I got lots of cartoon bubbles going on right now.
You have to find
humor. No, you take them. What are the people like? Is it different in the southern part or is it the northern part? Have you run into any problems with people or are they pretty friendly along the whole way?
They think we talk funny, but they think we talk funny.
Boy, are they wrong.
I get teased about saying toast every time I go down there. I can't figure out why, but it sounds strange to their ears. Actually, people are, kind of the same all over.
Sure.
If you're decent to people, they tend to be decent to you, and I've always had good luck with interactions with people down there.
Well, we've been talking with Jack Weidenbach,
who is 73.
Yeah, 73. He's got a picture, I say. 72, not 73. We've been talking about riding in the Appalachian Mountains. And of course, you've been listening to us on KYMN 95.1, the 1, 1080 AM. Jack, we're just about out of time here, but what's kind of the future hold for you? Sounds like you're going back to the Appalachians this fall. Any other rides you're planning on taking? any new motorcycles in the future?
Well, I'm old enough to not make too many plans, but Yeah.
Well, you are almost 73.
I know. I would like to get a trip out west in the summer, but I'm having a hard time finding the time and somebody to ride with. I might just do it alone.
Well, if you wait till next year, Dave and I are thinking about a two-week trip.
Yes.
Oh, well, that would be good. Yeah. I can wait till next year.
Yeah, we got to pick your brain on that one a little bit.
New bike.
This is going on Jeff and Terry's account here at the station. This is an official show trip. So we're working on the expenses.
I'm definitely in on that.
Okay.
They're going to be surprised by that bill. We really keep adding that up.
I know. The invoice is coming.
Well, this has been an interesting show. I feel the need to send Pat over to speak with my wife as her other father at the fact that I need a bike here. So,
well, now that I know that KYMN is footing the bill,
yeah,
they could probably get you one.
I'll put specialized plates on it, whatever they want, but you just got to convince Sarah that I need a bike.
I'll try.
But yeah, this has been a great show and a lot of interesting facts on the Appalachian Mountains and the riding out there that people may not have known, but there are still a couple more interesting facts because it is time for Dave's Interesting Facts.
And Jack, this is where we test Andy and Pat's knowledge, and you feel free too. We'll see.
Yeah.
Actually, Andy, was it last show you had some right?
I've had some right, just like you've pronounced a couple names correctly.
Okay. Well taken. You know that the Appalachian Mountains are some of the oldest mountains in North America. They go for almost 2,000 miles from Canada all the way down to Alabama. But how old are they? We'll start with you, Andy.
Seven. I don't know.
How many years old?
I'm going to go with 3 million years old. I have no idea.
Well, Did he get it?
Are you kidding? He's not even in the same universe.
More or less?
It's a little older than that.
Much older than the Rockies.
Yes.
10 million.
Okay. Okay. Jack.
Oh, you said Appalachian Mountains.
Bail him out. Get it a little closer.
I probably won't be right either, but it's more like 3.5 billion, isn't it?
480 million.
A 480
million years old.
I was pretty close.
I was, 10 I was, million?
Well,
closer
was,
than me.
I was further off than they were. I think the rocks are that old, but the mountains are.
What's the tallest mountain in the Appalachians? What's the name of it?
I got nothing.
No.
It's Mount Mitchell. Most people know that, but
do most?
Yeah. Do you know what state it's in?
Virginia.
Well, Andy doesn't know.
West Carolina.
Did you say North Carolina?
Yes.
Yes, you are correct. Way to go. How about the elevation?
That would be
10,000 feet, Dave.
No, you're wrong.
I know.
Of course.
That would be 12,400 feet.
You are really wrong.
8,000 feet, Dave.
No, you are wrong. Now give Jack a chance here.
Well,
you guys are all way too high.
It's a little over 5,000 feet, but I couldn't tell you exactly.
Well, it is over 5,000. It's 6,600 feet.
I've walked to the top of it.
Okay, here's a very easy one. What type of tree dominates Mount Mitchell? What's the most common tree on it?
A pine tree, Dave.
Well, not really.
Apple tree.
You know, you're far way off.
Christmas tree.
Jackie,
I have no idea.
It's a red spruce. You were kind of...
That like
was
a pine
my
tree.
Like my well, apples well, are red. That was my second choice.
You combined Pat and my answer. We were right there.
Okay. And finally, the mountain range gets its name from what?
A Native American word, Dave.
Well, you're on the right track.
I'm stopping right there.
It's close Native American tribe.
And you are correct.
Yes.
What's the name of the tribe?
The Appalachians.
Well, the Appalachians.
No.
Hey, this has been a lot of fun. This has been a lot of fun.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank Jack for joining us, and we'd also like to remind you next week to tune in to On Tap with Corey and Ira and find out everything beer in southern Minnesota. And, hey, tune in 2 weeks when Dave and I will have Frank Burris on, who is talking about sustainable food through insects. And
yes, crickets and grasshoppers.
And he's bringing a hot plate, so don't miss that show.
We may have cricket tacos.
Can we stop by?
Yeah. You can stop by. Bring your appetite. We'd like to, of course, thank Hayes for updating the Northfield Outdoors Facebook page, and to Professional Pride Realty for sponsoring Northfield Outdoors. And as always, Dave,
until next time, get out there and enjoy the great outdoors. Thanks, folks.
Thanks.
This has been Northfield Outdoors with Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty. Join Dave and Andy every other Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on 95 The One, or streaming at kymnradio.net.